So welcome. Thank you for coming. It always feels wonderful to be back here. It was wonderful sitting with you this morning. It seems that acoustics are pretty good in here. And do I need to raise my voice? Can everybody hear me pretty well? Okay. Just collect this if I start to trail off. So I thought of a saying of Dogen as I was sitting this morning with you, where he says, to study the way is to study the self. And then I was thinking, I've been doing this a long time, and I'm still asking myself, what is the self? And I'm supposed to talk about what the self is. I don't know. What is the self? We try to label it with our thinking mind. What I know about the self, the best way I can describe it, and it's certainly not the only way, but the self is our life, and our life seems to be made up of four main types of experience. Of course, there's our thinking, there's our feeling, our hearing, and our seeing. And sometimes we say taste and smell are separate, but to me those are like types of sensations. So I say there's four basic types of human experience. And they're constantly arising and falling away, taking ever new forms. And there's thoughts swirling around all of it. For most of us, most of the time, there's thoughts involved. And Buddha said our suffering is we get stuck in our thinking. We get stuck in our ideas of good and bad. And his third noble truth is the cause of our suffering is our clinging. So clinging to our thoughts. So what I've been trying to do with my own practice in the last maybe 20 years or so is, how can I just let go of this clinging to thoughts and just let the flow of my experience, the flow of our experience together, go where it wants to go. You know, take our hands off the steering wheel. Where does life want to take us? Remember, as a child, I used to lay on the bed and wonder and look up at the ceiling and then out the window and out to the sky and the stars. And how far does space go? And there's no limit, there's no boundary there. No matter how far out we imagine ourselves traveling, say trillions of light years, we travel through space. We'll still be able to travel another trillion, countless trillions of light years in any direction and still be in that same place. Of being able to do the same thing again and again and again. There's only here. There's nothing other than here. So the other component to that is time. If we imagine ourselves traveling endless and endless trillions of kalpas into the past or into the future, wherever we would stop, we would still be in that same position, able to travel endless number of kalpas into the future or into the past. So our life is truly an infinite life, a timeless, infinite life. And as we allow this flow of our experience, if you notice the sounds, my hearing's not so great, so maybe there's not much else to hear right now other than my voice. Maybe a distant roar. Notice how we imagine that sound as being outside. And take a look and see if you can find the boundary between inside and outside as you hear a voice, as you hear a car. I'll invite you to consider that if you think you've found one, that's all that's happened. You thought you found one. You've only found the thought. And you can pay attention to the tingling behind your eyes. The sensation of that, where we sometimes locate our personal self, the me, the ego. You see, there's a little bit of subtle tension there behind the eyes. And then notice your contact with the floor, whether your seat or your feet. Can you find an actual boundary between those sensations? I experienced the thought of a boundary, but no boundary. And we're all experiencing that same no boundary, whether we think it's something else. It's not that I never think it's something else, I do. But we're all in the same here and in the same now. And it's alive. That's another question. What is this aliveness we feel? It takes many different forms, but the infinite consciousness that we are fuels all of it, fuels all of our aliveness together. As the identity of relative and absolute says, all things intermingle even as they stand alone. So I call this aliveness the spirit of our interbeing. If you notice any thoughts you're having right now, see if you can notice a gap between each thought. Or maybe you'll experience a gap after one thought rises up and dissolves. You may experience a short gap before the next one shows up. What is your actual experience of that gap? You notice how our awareness of being present is there before that thought. It's there during the gap between the next thought, and it's there as the next thought arises and passes away. Untouched. Our being here and now is untouched by that thought process. In one way, it intimately touches each thought. It intimately touches each sensation, each sight, each sound. And then they dissolve, untouched. So our life is this flow of endless flow, feelings, sights, sounds, thoughts. And I was going to speak today about wisdom and devotion. And I wanted to have a little experiential time with our actual self, with our actual being, before we talk about it. One saying by a teacher, I call him a Hindu Zen master. His name is Nisargadatta. He had a saying that to me really encapsulates what our spirit of inquiry is about. And he said, when I look inside, I find that I'm nothing. So in that sense, he means that in the Zen sense of no thing, I can't find any actual entity that I can call me. What I find is this flow of experience. I find thoughts, feelings, sights and sounds, endlessly arriving, and then dissolving back into our source. And he says this, finding that I am nothing is wisdom. So we could say the not finding, this not finding is the finding of wisdom. It's the finding of our aliveness that's free of thought. Not only are thoughts not what we think they are, but they're free of what we think they are. So the way they are, the way the absence of thought is the way things actually are. So when I think of Zen wisdom, that's the best way I can say it in 100 words or less. So then he goes on, I'm kind of adding all this commentary, but he just said that. He said, when I look inside, I find I'm nothing, and that's wisdom. And then he said, when I look outside, I find that I'm everything. And that's love. And my life turns between the two. When I think about love, or when I try to express love, for me it just comes out as unconditional acceptance, you know, like a warm feeling in the heart, an unconditional acceptance. My mind's not so bright anymore. I start talking before we do the opening gatha. Maybe Gary forgets to do all his bows. I think we could also substitute in the context of wisdom and devotion, we could say devotion is love, or love is devotion. So we can say, when I look out at all of you, we look at each other, we find that we're all one, we're all everything. And that's devotion. He said, you know, in my life turns between the two, between the wisdom and the love, between the looking and the looking. So the flow of this life force, the flow of our experience, the flow of our sensory experience, that is the energy of the journey between the two, wisdom and love, wisdom and devotion. I feel like I'm giving a conceptual talk, but in a way we're just sharing the spirit, we're sharing the journey of the life force. You know, and in sharing it, I've kind of branched out. I started in Japanese Zen for many years, and I've kind of branched out. I practiced with Thich Nhat Hanh group, which is still Zen, and then I've practiced more with other Hindu groups, Advaita, Vedanta groups. And to me, that's still Zen. So when I come to teach Zen, I try to bring it all, put it all in one big basket, because to me, Zen is the openness to it all. Zen is the It's the essence of the infinite consciousness. That's not accurate. It's an attempt to kind of be inclusive, not exclusive. See how it's all one mystery. So one saying that Visarvadatta said that seemed very much Zen, very much like Dogen. You remember Dogen said, to live in accord with the way is to leave the way to the way. And Visarvadatta said, to be without thought in the waking state is the deepest devotion. And Ramana Maharshi said, surrender itself is a mighty prayer. So it seems like all three of those sayings can be an inclusive coming together of different traditions, and also fuel for our spirit of inquiry. Because no matter how eloquent our words are, they're so inadequate. It's just that way. When he says to be without thought in the waking state is the greatest devotion, I feel I need to add, to be without attachment to thought is the greatest devotion. Because, you know, our heart beats, our body breathes, and our mind thinks. So if we try to be without thought, that's just another thought. So Hakam says, our thought being no thought, our singing and dancing is the voice of the Dharma. It doesn't mean the pushing away of thought or the exclusion of thought. It's recognition that thought doesn't separate anything. It just comes up and goes away. It doesn't create anything, destroy anything. It doesn't amount to anything. But somehow it's a way we harmonize with each other.
We're in the now.
We're in the now. Okay.
So we need to stop now. Or?
Well, I was going to read a couple of things, and then if people want to take some time to ask questions or make comments, we can do that. In the vein of being inclusive, here's something that Yogananda said. He said, "There's, and if you don't like the word God, you can use spirit or infinite awareness." He says, there are two ways of approaching God in nature. One is to separate the Lord from all his manifestations. Neti neti, not this, not this, is the saying in India. Something of that consciousness there must always be, lest one become trapped in attachment to form. The other way is to behold the Lord manifested everywhere. The first way by itself may be too austere for most devotees. The second way is much sweeter. Best of all is a combination of both. The Divine Mother is busy with her housework of creation. The baby devotee cries and she gives him a toy to play with, riches perhaps, or name or fame. If he cries again, she gives him another toy. But if the baby throws everything away and cries for her love alone, she picks him up at last and whispers to him lovingly, if you really want only me and not my gifts, then come. Be with me forever on my lap of infinity. Mm-hmm. And then the Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh wrote a poem, a complimentary poem. He's talking about Mother Earth as the spirit of all creation. He says, the earth is always patient and open-hearted. She is waiting for you. She's been waiting for you for the last trillion lifetimes. She can wait for any length of time. She knows you will come back to her one day. Fresh and green, she will welcome you exactly like the first time. Because love never says, this is the last time. Because Earth is a loving mother, she will never stop waiting for you. Yeah.
If I was waiting for someone else. Lovely to see you. Lovely to see you looking so well.
Good to see you, Joy. Yeah.
And I really appreciate your Dharma talk. When I first started practicing, one comment by Ramana Maharshi stuck with me and was germane to my practice as well as what you said today. Because he cautioned practitioners that your effort that you want to put forth becomes your bondage. And just the other day, I'm not on social media, but I received something that I never read of his, but it's perfect in what you're talking today. Because one of his students approached him at some point and said, Ramana, how am I, or master probably, how am I supposed to treat the others? And without hesitation, he responded, "Why others?"
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
The practice started in India, so I'm not surprised that we go back there, regardless of, you know, where we begin. Practicing with you. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think when you talked about our effort becoming our bondage, when we think it's our effort, it's our self-conscious effort, then we're going to, it's intrinsically, that's an effort to separate. And so that kind of effort will separate us from others. But if you just realize that when effort is necessary, it'll be there, and it comes from that deeper place, it can be a unifying force. It will be a unifying force.
But I expected you to end at some point and say, the first line is to know the self, but the second line is to forget the self.
Yeah.
So.
Forget ideas of the self.
Thank you.
This idea of the others and how we treat the others and no others and the life gravitating or pivoting between love on the external. It occurred to me when Joy said that love, the boundary or the interruption is when there's no attention there. So if I stroll through the world and I see trees, but they're just, you know, just flying by without my attention, or I see apparitions of creatures without paying them attention, then I tend to not have the love of what I'm able to offer them my attention, which somehow I don't really know how or where connects with this internal no self, this I'm in them, they're in me. But I think this question is important, and I'm wondering what you think about it. Because there seems to be, for me at least, a feeling of inattention and more otherness to some extent, perhaps a sort of just lack of attention, which manifests, as I perceive it, in a certain amount of cruelty in the world, which when I encounter and pay attention to that, I don't know if there's a boundary or a love or what is there, but it's a little overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, there needs to be some sort of centering in the deeper self before we can really give full attention to the outside world. And of course, we can fool ourselves and be at sort of a shallower level and let things float by and we're avoiding attention. You know, it's not like I can give an answer. I think the question is very important, is to contemplate the question, but then also live the question. And so that can, the question becomes the link between the outside world, which gives us, you know, endless invitations to pay attention to, and the contemplation of our actual self, you know, our deepest devotion to the big self. So live that, keep living that question, you know, and it fits in with, you know, when effort is necessary, it'll be there. When the effort to pay attention comes from inside, from the deeper self, and not just in being formed by our desires and fears, then the attention that really needs to be there will come. That's just another way of living the question. It's not the answer, you know, but, yeah.
Thank you.
Can you expand a bit on the Wayan concepts of boundaries? Can you perhaps make it more real so that we can appreciate it.
Well, when I try to do it, person says, no, that's not what you can do it. There's no way I can do it. What can be more real than here and now? Other than the idea of something being more real, what could be more real than here and now?
Without limit.
What's that?
Without limit.
Without limit. Sometimes when we remind ourselves that there's no limits, that makes it feel more real. Mm-hmm. That's for me anyway.
Can I ask you a question about Deborah's question?
Yeah.
When you said that, Deborah, I thought what you said, isn't it basically what you said, that the journey is the answer? And that the destination is immaterial? Or something along those lines?
Well, I think that she's asking a question that comes from deep inside her. And so I was trying to help her to have confidence in living that question rather than trying to just answer it. Of course, we're going to try to answer it in certain forms. What do we do about Trump, you know?
That's a basic question.
We're non-violent.
What's that?
We're non-violent. We're non-violent.
Non-violent.
Oh, we're non-violent. Yeah. Unfortunately, Matt, I don't trust the people. Yeah.
Thank you, Shikhan. I really appreciated your concrete, experiential introduction to your talk, because for me, it's always been resting in the body and the awareness and sensing and feeling everything as it's happening. And for me, it's coming back to that always of just, what is this? That we can't really articulate, but it's there. It's there. And so I appreciated that reminder. Thank you.
Thank you. Guess we could do Keen.